Well, kia ora and welcome to Sobriety Chat. I am your host, Lotta Dan, otherwise known as Mrs. D. I am the community manager and content creator at livingsober.org.nz. And I'm joined today by the lovely Matt Kalman. Matt is a writer, journalist, and author. He's also an artist and a photographer. He is a dad and a husband. He's also an athlete, and of course, he is sober. So welcome, Matt.
Oh, thanks, Lotta. Thanks for inviting me, and it's great to be here talking to you all.
Yeah, I mean, just having conversations with other people who are doing the same thing, right, and living every day without touching alcohol.
Absolutely, yes, and it's something, I guess, that I'm down the track a little bit, I take for granted a little bit more, but it's really good to go back and think about how it was for me when I joined Living Sober and was in that really fragile place where I was really not sure what the hell was going on and how to fix things.
Crazy. So just to, you know, full disclosure, Matt and I met when he actually came to my house to interview me for an article he was writing for, I think it was the Drug Foundation magazine. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. And it was quite crazy, actually, because I had only just joined Living Sober. I'd probably been on the site for maybe 2 weeks, and I was already freelancing at that point as a journalist and writing articles for Drug Foundation. And the editor rang me up and said, "Matt, we've got an article we want to do about online support communities for sobriety, and we want you to interview Lotta Dan from Living Sober." And I just about jumped out of my chair because I mean, he didn't know that I joined the site myself.
I didn't actually know that you were already a member. I thought, I remember, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you you hadn't actually quit at that point. You were on the cusp.
No.
You had a very sort of strong and a dialogue about your relationship with alcohol, but you hadn't quite pulled the pin. Is that right? Where were you at?
I very much hadn't pulled the pin. I was really in that place where I was trying to control it and moderate, which I'd been doing for a long period of time off and on, generally losing that battle because it's not a battle.
I was going to say, how is that going?
Yeah, not well. It doesn't go well because alcohol is a disinhibiting drug. Like, it disinhibits you, and once you have a few, that's about the point where you start losing the ability to moderate. Like, it's the drug that does exactly what it's designed to do, and it's very, very effective at it. Most people find it pretty hard to moderate. And at the point that I had signed up to Living Sober, I was pretty desperate, and I knew that I had to address my drinking. I didn't really, at the point, I think maybe most people will understand this feeling, you don't really know if do I really have a problem? Aren't I drinking like everybody else drinks? Does my life not look like everybody else's? Aren't I fine? But then it was at the moment I was sort of on the website and I was about to push join, click join with the mouse, and I was just hovering over that mouse, just kind of agonizing. And I thought the only thing that really made me click on the mouse and join was, if I don't have a problem, then why am I here? And
yeah.
That was a real, just it made it a bit simpler. But then I came and met Lotta. I got asked to do this article, and I'd already been a member, and I said to the editor, "Listen, I've just signed up to this site. I'm having my own personal struggles." So I hadn't really engaged with the members yet. I hadn't gone onto the live feed really. I'd maybe gone on and just sort of lurked for a little bit, as a lot of people do. But I was still very much wavering between the decision to quit for good and
yeah, I remember you
trying
saying,
to address it. Yeah,
I remember you saying that you had a gathering coming up with some mates. It was like a reunion thing, maybe some school friends. I can't remember, and you were nervous about doing that without having a drink. Mm. I mean, can you remember that fear?
Yeah.
When you're standing on the precipice of quitting and you're looking forward into a life with no alcohol, and how scary that is.
Well, when you're thinking about quitting, of course, then your mind goes to, well, it was actually a group of Wellington stay-at-home dads that I was friendly with. So I'd living in Christchurch at the time, and I flew up to Wellington to meet you and do the interview. I was also running the Wellington Half Marathon that weekend, and I was catching up with my mates at the pub, my dad mates. And it's just that whole thing, like, at what point are you going to go somewhere where alcohol isn't around? There's weddings, there's 21st, there's, you know, birthdays of friends. It's just relentless. You think, when am I going to be able to quit because I've got this thing coming up? Or
yeah, there's always that one thing.
Yeah.
Oh, but I've got that wedding. Oh, but what about Christmas? Oh, but what about, you know, because it's everywhere all the time, right?
You're still in that brain of, I can't live without alcohol, because it's so ingrained in you from such a young age that it's just what you do. So, and I'd asked you, I said, you know what, I'm really worried about, you know, I want to not drink. At that time I was moderating fairly successfully, but still agonizing over drinking or not drinking. So going into those situations, I wasn't good at that, but it takes practice. You've got to like go and practice that.
Yeah.
Feeling uncomfortable, feeling like their eyes are on you, why aren't you drinking?
Yeah.
And in the end you said to me, it's just a beverage in a glass. It's more about catching up with your mates and just focus on that. And so that just made it so simple. And I thought, yeah, no, that's pretty true. It's very arbitrary.
That's something I did very early on as well. I remember heading to a work barbecue of my husband's colleagues, and I was newly sober and terrified. I mean, I just felt so foreign because my whole life alcohol had been with me, especially at social events. And I remember walking up the driveway, they had a long drive, and in my mind I was making a list of everything about this event that was good or what it was about that wasn't the alcohol, because I was so fixated on the alcohol. So I was literally like, this is about getting to know my husband's new colleague. This is about it's summertime. This is about they've got a pool and the kids are excited. This is about all these things and not that liquid in my glass, because we give it so much power, don't we?
Yeah. And I guess when it really boils down to it, and you're going out to these social things, you're going to the pub or whatever where there's alcohol or your mates are drinking, at first you think that all the eyes are on you and it's really focused on your decisions and around the alcohol and what's in your drink. No one actually is really noticing or taking that much notice of what you're doing. They're really focused on themselves, just like you are. So the more I went out, the more I actually observed and thought, actually, people don't put that much importance on it. It's just there. And some circles, yes, it's harder than others, and you've got some mates are going to be dicks about it and say, oh, why aren't you drinking and you're being a wowser or whatever. But that's happened very rarely.
Yeah, and it's usually more about them, eh?
Oh, it's totally about them, and you figure that out pretty quickly. And some people that question it come up to you later and say, oh, I've been thinking I should be knocking it off as well. And they'll say it quietly to you. They won't say it in front of everyone else. Mm. And, you know, the amount of people that have rung me just, you know, out of the blue saying, I'm knocking it on the head, and or I'm trying to stop, or I'm thinking about stopping.
Amazing. And so for you, after you quit, I mean, I'm not giving away anything here because you've written this amazing book, which I happen to have here in my hand, about your sort of journey with sobriety. But, you know, it wasn't really a linear, you just took the alcohol away and everything became peachy. I mean, that's not how it goes. So do you want to just talk a little bit about, you know, some of what came up and then needed working on once you'd stopped drinking alcohol?
Initially, the stopping is about the stopping, and then it's kind of you're bedding in habits, new habits, and it's really just difficult breaking habits, right? So it's the agonizing and the internal dialogue. And for some people, it'll be a physical reaction of they're needing the drug. For me, it wasn't so physical. And in fact, the physical benefits happened pretty quickly. Like I'd started sleeping better, and my skin improved, and my weight fluctuating sort of settled down, and I've managed to stay at a pretty even weight since I stopped drinking nearly 6 years ago. But I think the problem is, and then I had the pink cloud phase that you talk about a lot, Lotto. You have this feeling like you're, you know, maybe or so in, and you start to feel just absolutely amazing, and everything's possible, and you feel you've got all this energy, and it's just this most beautiful thing. And then, of course, you crash off the cloud. And the first hard life thing that happened to me was probably about 6 months in, and things really crashed. My mental health took a real dive. And I started having kind of quite bad panic attacks because of the situation, because for all my most of my life I'd had alcohol to cope with stress and some of the hard things in life, and I just sort of numbed it all away. So I didn't have any real coping strategies. I was kind of like a child emotionally, I guess, if you want to put it that way. And I had to kind of learn how to kind of navigate life and the ups and downs. And like, your life's not going to be just perfect as a result of giving up alcohol or whatever choices you make. I mean, stuff's going to happen. At the moment, we're finding that out with the stresses around the pandemic and how that's kind of changing things, and you're thinking the world's not as stable as it was. And so I think it was it took me to some pretty difficult places in my life in terms of a diagnosis of depression after the panic attacks of the following year, and sort of it's taken me years to kind of come out of it, but I'm far better off because I've learned how to actually kind of ride those waves a lot more effectively.
So you almost had to kind of go down to come up.
Yeah.
And would you have ever done that if you hadn't taken the alcohol away?
I would never have probably had that massive crash if I hadn't have taken the alcohol away, to the point where sometimes I think, am I better off just drinking? Like, honestly do. And I have to be honest about that, because I think a lot of people will question that decision if it's took you to some such dark places. And like, I had some pretty rough times, and it's been really hard on my family, but in the long run, it's been just the best thing I've ever done for myself, because for years and years, I struggled to cope with my mental health, whether I called it that or not. And it was only the taking the alcohol away that forced me to truly address it properly. And I'm not perfect at it. My life's not perfect, and it's still difficult, sort of ups and downs, but I'm far better at kind of doing what I need to do to stay content.
And it does take time to figure that out, eh? I mean, I had no coping mechanisms for my emotions either. And I remember when I first quit, I used to walk around and I'd literally go up to people, especially older people who seemed like they just had their shit together, and I'd say, how do you deal with sadness? How do you deal with anger? What do you do when you get frustrated? Like, there was some answer, you know, there was some golden ticket thing, and it just takes a while to kind of figure out what works for you. Oftentimes I find actually the best thing is nothing, you know, maybe just saying out loud what you're thinking, or just having some sort of things that you can go to that are self-soothing, or tools and techniques. But yeah, it definitely takes time, which is why, you know, as you know, Matt, a lot of our members at Living Sober are in those early stages, which are gritty, hard. You're learning how to deal with cravings. You're learning how to go out and socialize, but you are dealing with these underlying things that might be bubbling to the surface, whether it be mental health, things around your relationships, your friend groups, whatever. And it's so, we're just always saying, hold on, keep going. I know it's hard, but it's in the long run, it's going to be better. Well, I think it's good that you're honest about the fact that there's still moments now where you say, would it just be easier for me to go back to that drug that kind of served me for all those years? And by the way, it's everywhere in our society, twinkling away as if it's the answer.
Yeah, and I think initially my kind of way I've dealt with stuff is to try and fix it. If there's a problem, I try and fix it, right? And so, because it's a way to control the situation. And so when I was struggling with the alcohol and it built up over years of like having this deteriorating relationship with alcohol and seeing it more negatively and then seeing how it was affecting my life, and then saying, right, that was the most obvious thing that I thought I could fix, take the alcohol away. And so it boiled down to a really simple decision, right? But as I've gone through that, I've worked out there are no quick fixes. Like you say, there's no quick fix for anything. It's about kind of being kind of really self-analytical, being really honest with yourself. If you're wondering whether you got a problem with alcohol and you sort of feel like you might have a problem, I think deep down you really do know. If you really just say to yourself, right, do I really have a problem or not? I mean, I knew I had a problem for years and I just decided not to address it. Sorry, I just sort of waffled on and I've forgotten the question and
loving
what you were
the
saying,
waffle.
But we can move on.
I was
going to
ask
I can waffle
about
all day.
Exercise about, and what role exercise plays now in your sobriety, because it has been a big part of like looking after your mental health, hasn't it, and physical health. I mean, what are the benefits and what do you actually do now?
I got onto Coast to Coast after my kind of breakdown and depression diagnosis and coming out the other side of it. I've always been someone that's enjoyed fitness and playing sport and being a really active person, but all the drinking and all the sort of the hangovers and having to kind of do it with a hangover, like I've run sort of pretty regularly for years, but often with a hangover and not feeling that great physically. So yeah, to come out the other side of sobriety and get really kind of more involved in sort of that fitness stuff, I'm running on much more pure fuel now. So like I feel much better about it. But generally just exercising puts me into the moment rather than sort of worrying about sort of the past or stuff that I'm dwelling on or
so worrying out of about here and down yeah. into your body.
And just right in the present. And often it doesn't stop me kind of ruminating and thinking, but often it's a more positive kind of thinking pattern rather than a negative. So if I'm just sitting around at home and worrying about the things I'm not doing or the things that are coming up, the things that have happened in the past, it can be a more of a negative.
What have you?
Of course the pandemic forced the cancellation of the 2-day race this year, so which affected about 1,000 or more of the competitors. The 1 day is still going ahead. So I've done a couple of 1 day races, which is called the longest day. So this year I was training to be part of a 3-person team and I was just doing the kayak leg. So I was still really into my kayaking and I go for the odd bike ride and I'm not as crazy and full on about it as I was, but I'm trying to find a balance and just doing it for the enjoyment factor and just getting out there. Regularly.
It's funny how things shift and change, eh? Because I sort of, every now and then I think, oh yeah, I'm really in the flow now. This is how I do my recovery. This is how I do sobriety. Mm. I do this and this and this. And then I'll find 6 months later that shifted and what was working isn't working so much anymore or maybe needs tweaking or, yeah, I mean, it's just a constant kind of evolving process. That's why I often say, you know, that this term in recovery, which I do use, I like it. I know some people in sobriety circles sort of see it as like being a bit of a fixed thing where it's like, you know, I've moved on now, I'm not in recovery. For me, being in recovery means, it doesn't mean that I'm desperately trying not to drink alcohol every day. Those days have gone. Yeah. But being in recovery means I constantly have an eye on what am I doing to keep myself well? How am I going? You know, how am I going with my physical health, my spiritual health, my mental health? It's that Te Whare Tapawhā model, which in New Zealand people may be familiar with. I'll put a link actually in the blog post under this video to the Te Whare Tapawhā model of wellness, which is a wonderful framework which has these four pillars that sort of hold up the whare, the house, and then it has the land or the whenua underneath, and these four pillars are equally as important, and they're physical health, mental health, family health, and spiritual health. And we constantly need to be sort of having a little eye on each of those things to hold up ourselves, right? And so that's I'm 10 years sober, you're 6 years sober, but that never ends, eh, Matt?
No, and the stuff that was working for me 2 years ago when I was right into the Coast to Coast and I was training 16 hours a week and that was where my focus was. After that, what happens after that? You can't maintain that sort of thing forever. And last year I had a long period of forcing myself to go out and exercise and physically and mentally feeling really flat and just feeling like it wasn't working anymore. And like all those things that were working weren't working. I had a little wobble where I was thinking,
would it be a panic?
Yeah, I'd be like, well, that's not working now. And a lot of it was existential stuff again, like after I wrote my book, the second book hasn't happened and I'm thinking, well, what do I write now? Like, well, I've got to write something because I want to write. I can't just tick a book off just because for the sake of it, because that's what I do now. So it's about moving on to that next kind of thing to keep the passion going. And
so what did you do when you reached that slump, when you couldn't maintain that same level of training and what have you? How did things shift for you after that with the exercise and other things that maybe came into play?
That's kind of when I thought about whether I should take up drinking again, actually. Like, I got to that kind of low ebb and it just sort of crept up on me.
I remember you mentioning that to me, actually, in an email, I think, or a phone call we had. And well, I said, Matt, you call me before you do that.
Well, I was going to my wife's business, her partner's retreat in Queenstown. So this was all the people that are partners in her firm. And their partners get to go on these once a year. We'll go somewhere and they Thanks all meet during the day. Yeah, and then we have dinners and it's all pretty collegial and very friendly and nice and stuff. But of course, at the dinners, everyone has a few drinks and it's quite fun and all that. And I decided before I went, I'd kind of talked to someone else who was a sort of a professional in the mental health world, you might call them, and they just sort of said, well, why couldn't you drink if you want to? And which was well-meaning, and that sounds bad out of context, but ultimately, listen, Laura, it is our decision, and you know, our lives are about our decisions. And like, I kind of had a moment where thinking, oh, I've kind of got permission here. And I was at the point where I was actually contemplating whether I could just go back to having the odd drink. Not blowouts, but you know, I know where it leads. I was kidding myself that I could go back to it and moderate and just enjoy it for what it is. Mm. Even though I was just about five years down the track. I wasn't quite 5 years at that point. And I went away on this thing and sat down for dinner, and I was still thinking, will I drink or won't I? And I kind of mentioned it to Ranu, and she was kind of shocked, thinking, you've got this sorted, you don't need to do this. And I was like, well, I'll just see how I feel. So I was at a very swing moment. Mm. And then I sit down to one of the partners' wives that had come along. And we just started talking about it because she asked me how my sobriety was going. And she told me that she'd been sober for, I think, a couple of years, maybe. It was quite a while. And then we talked about the benefits of sobriety. Yeah. And had a great chat. No, she was the only one I talked to for the whole dinner. And I was thinking, God, you know, isn't that just amazing? That fate
isn't that amazing? I mean, imagine if
the only other person that wasn't drinking.
Boozer sat down and went, all right, let's get into it. And you were just on that pivot point.
I think I'd kind of probably mostly decided that I wasn't going to. And then after that dinner, I was back in the, I'm okay. And generally, you know, I seriously don't think I'll ever pick up again, because I just don't see the point. It's just lost. I know what it can't do for me, and I know what it can do for me, and what it can do for me is so small compared to the massive list of things it can't do to help me.
That's right.
I just know that it's not. It's just off the table. But and I'm really.
I mean, I had a moment just the other night, actually, and I don't have cravings anymore, or pangs, or kind of look at people drinking and wish I could drink or anything like that. But I did have a moment the other night in the kitchen, and I was having a really bad day. Like, there was just pressures, and I was low for a few reasons, and I was just feeling gritty. And I just had a moment, and I don't even think Corin, my husband, was having a beer. He does occasionally, not much. Mm. But for some reason, I just sort of blurted out, well, it's not like I can escape anymore, like everyone else on the planet seems to at this point, you know, to kind of take in the pressures of, you know, kind of moaning that I felt like I wanted to just have some relief, right, from how I was feeling. And alcohol does that. That's the reason people do it. And I just had that little sort of moment of, just sort of begrudging, or at least trying to make a point that I wasn't able to do that, you know. And I was trying to think what I did after that. I don't even think I did anything else special, but just even saying that and acknowledging that out loud helped, because it kind of just made me tap into that feeling, proud of myself again, I suppose, and also some compassion for myself that I don't get to do that. I don't get to do that ever, and a lot of people do. I choose not to do that, and I don't want to, because I just think alcohol is the cause of so much harm in our societies in general, but certainly in my life it was. So I don't ever want to touch that stuff again. But I think it's fair to acknowledge sometimes, you know, We choose every single day that we are just going to sit in our stinking feelings. And sometimes it's hard.
Yeah, it is. And like, that's why I just admire everyone that's going on this journey, and all of you on Living Sober who are just coming into the start of it. That it's totally worth it. And like, it's just changed our lives, hasn't it, Lotta? Like, going back to reading Lotta's first book, Mrs. D's Going Without, was just so amazing, the parallels in our life, like down to very, very specific details of things we've both done, that places we've grown up, places we've been, and just the feelings and the life experiences that we both shared with alcohol, and kind of the reasons why we gave up. It was just, that's why I never tire of coming and speaking in places like this, and why I write the book is so people can kind of key into your story and see themselves in it, because we've also got so much in common, and many of us are thinking the same thing and going through the same things, and a lot of people that I know have come up to me and it's like, oh, I'm struggling and I'd like to give up but I don't think I can, or I'm going to try or whatever, and we're all kind of walking the same path. And
that's exactly right, and the power of sharing is cannot be overestimated, and that's why a site like this works, right? Because we're all about peer support, and peer support and lived experience is the other kind of phrase they use in the addiction sector, is growing in its recognition of how powerful it is on an equal footing with the clinical help, because people do often need that really trained clinical help. But this peer support, which we offer here at Living Sober, which is simply, and it's so simple, but it's simply people coming in and just opening up and being honest about what's going on in their heads with regards to alcohol, what's going on in their lives with regards to emotion, and sharing that in a kind way where we're being supportive and non-judgmental, you know, is really powerful. Because the similarities are huge. I mean, there's a lot of differences, but there's a lot of similarities. My first drink, so we're both from Christchurch, right? Yeah. My first drink was on the beach at Wainui on Banks Peninsula, and it was a bottle of Marque Vu. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it's very similar. Like that's what I'm saying, like being over there in Akaroa and like the Marque Spew, that was one of the specific incidents where my sister had a bottle with her friends and I got a sip, and Canterbury Draft, I think, was my first drink back then. There was Canterbury Draft was everywhere. Can't see it so much now. It's just that whole kind of first forays into drinking was so exciting and such an adult thing, and it was a bit secretive and naughty because, you know, I was nothing from Mum and Dad's drinks cabinet, and
you felt kind of cool and rebellious. And the irony is, we were conforming, we were being the opposite of rebellious, and actually getting sober and living in this world which is soaked in alcohol, it's pushed on us almost, and choosing to turn against that is the true rebellion.
Yeah, we're a very small but very passionate group of outliers. I mean, we're probably, I'd hate to compare us to the protesters at Parliament at the moment, but there's a very small percentage of people that are living completely sober.
Let's not draw parallels with that.
I'm going to stop talking politics. I'm not going to say anything else. Going back to what you said about that whole peer support thing, when I was just about to sign up to the website, you know, I'd had years of being in my own head battling with this conversation that was going on. And so I was only talking to myself, and like, I was so messed up that I couldn't get any real clear support or answers, and I couldn't really talk to anyone else around me. I didn't feel I could. It was only when I went on Living Sober and then met Lotta and Lizzie, Prudence, and then sort of like started engaging on the site, on the live feed, and saying, you know, when I was struggling and having some, you know, wobbles, and then people immediately coming in and saying, it's okay, just hold on, just wait till tomorrow. And then starting to make these little friendships that turned into kind of like real life friendships. And we'd meet, you know, go on meetups every year. We went somewhere and just all sat around. And it's just that unspoken You don't need to explain yourself to these people to, you know, you just understand. And and you don't get that maybe in the rest of the relationships that you have when people are still drinkers. But the old drinking me would never have understood the current me. You know, I remember my mindset. It was all about, you know, the mindset is just like, you know it's not good for you, but it's fun and I'm prepared to put up with the bad side because it's so fun. And you can.
I wonder what the old drinking Lotta would think of the sober Lotta.
Well, you know.
The old drinking Lotta used to pour scorn on what I called navel gazing. I hate navel gazing. God, you know, self-help navel gazing. And now it's my favorite thing.
Well, I imagine you were quite fun as a drinker, but you're very fun as a non-drinker. Like, I think we're just better. I found that I was a much better version of myself sober. You go out with people and, you know, I go out socially now and I used to drink to survive social occasions because I found them so nerve-wracking and I felt the anxiety. Oh, and
so many people say that and they get sober and they discover they're actually really introverted and they're actually, you know, they can do social events, but they really draw energy from being in small groups or on their own.
Yeah, and I'm definitely an introvert. I've been forced to be an extrovert in some parts of my life, which, you know, I do, but I'm really just mimicking what other extroverts do. I'm really an introvert. I find, you know, I go to social family things and I can handle it for so long and then I have to kind of withdraw and like it's, and I just understand that about myself. And
well, that's the thing, right? You know that now. You know that now. You're not fighting against it. You know it. And so that you can look after that part of you. That's what's so, and it's interesting what you said about me being a fun. So fun is a really important word for me because, yes, I really identified, big part of my drinking persona was fun Lotta. I loved being fun Lotta. I wasn't a drama drunk. I wasn't a sad drunk. It was all about fun. And even if that was a Tuesday night disco on my own in the living room because I'd had two bottles of wine, you know, fun, not. That was my biggest fear with quitting was that the fun would stop and I would be boring. And I've discovered that's not true. I am still really fun, but not always. I'm fun I'm fun when the conditions are right for me to have fun. Yeah. And so it's not guaranteed now I'm not drinking. I might go to a party and I feel uncomfortable. The people aren't my people. Maybe my dress doesn't fit. I'm in a bad mood. Who knows? And I don't have fun. And when I first got sober, I used to beat myself up about that. Oh, no, I'm not fun. But now I'm like, you know what? That just wasn't my party. It doesn't mean anything about me fundamentally. It's okay. It's not all about the fact that you weren't drinking. It just wasn't the right conditions for you. And again, it takes time to kind of figure that out, time of not drinking. But yeah.
Yeah, I go to parties like that, which didn't suit me, where I felt uncomfortable and I felt really visible and I'd get even more shit-faced than usual because that was a way I felt right. Like to be invisible. But the opposite happened, so where you're the drunk guy. And also, I drank to bring myself out a bit more and to be more social and chatty. But by the end of the night, you're kind of incoherent. You can't stand straight and you're actually not good company. Like I get to the end of nights now and I have a good time. You know, sometimes I will go out and most of the time I have a really great time chatting with everyone. And we went down to Wellington to a friend's 40th a couple weekends ago and there was all these people I didn't know. So I forced myself to go and talk to new people. And then by the end of the night, we were playing, someone had given her Jenga for it was some kind of between them. So we were playing drunk Jenga in the kitchen. There's all these real drunk guys and I was playing too. I didn't knock the thing over once. It was then come close because I was so in control. And there was one guy who just got drunker and drunker. And if you knocked it over, you had to drink shots of some disgusting alcohol. And so he was getting worse and worse at the game. And like by the end of it, he was knocking it over the first try every time. And he was swaying. Like, it was actually quite funny. But I was thinking, I'm glad I'm not drinking.
Well, that's right. And then remembering that waking up in the morning with all that shame and regret and what did I do and what did I say? And that's what killed me in the end, actually. It was all that guilt and shame and that inner dialogue that just used to beat myself up.
Yeah.
You're weak, you're pathetic, you're embarrassing, all that crap. And that's what you don't see. You see the fun guy at the 40th. You don't know what's happening for them the next morning. And that's why I always say, you know, connect with your friends, connect in communities like this, do what you can to connect with people. Do it the morning after. Do it, you know, on a Wednesday. Yeah. Do it when you're feeling that discomfort, because that's the stuff that lingers with you more than that high that you had from that boozy night.
Yeah, and that's what I remember now when we go on family holidays and we're with friends and you have those awesome conversations and you really get to catch up with people. Now it's wonderful. And, life's I think also one of those great things when you start to get, you know, you get sober and you get your mornings back, eh? Like, that's underestimated. You have better sleep and you get your morning. You get to wake up in the morning. And some mornings you do feel tired or whatever and you don't feel like getting out of bed, but it's not because of alcohol. It's not that big handbrake on the rest of your day and on sometimes on the rest of the first part of your week, like depending on how bad it got. And, it's a bit of a gift, eh? Like, it's a gift of that quality time that you're giving back to yourself.
That
adds up, you know, like all those things add up. And also that self-esteem stuff, you're rebuilding that relationship with who you are.
Yes, or rebuilding or just actually building. I mean, I didn't know who I was. I really didn't. And now I know that I'm fun, but I'm also very watery. I'm also quite easy to tears. I feel things quite deeply. I've been crying this morning, just come off a live stream of a friend's funeral. Yesterday I was actually crying, if I'm honest, watching the protest down at Parliament just because of the tension and the, I don't know, my heart was hurting. And sounds kooky, but that's just the way I am. And here I was not wanting to navel gaze, and now I'm just like, you know what, this is me. If I have to get another tissue out and wipe my eyes, so be it.
Yeah, and I think that process of getting sober helped me stand a lot taller in the world, because when I was drinking and before I had to kind of like rebuild myself after my breakdown, my self-esteem was one of the main problems. You know, like, I didn't walk tall in the world at all, and I didn't feel good about things that I'd achieved, and I felt bad about things that I wasn't doing with my life. And but I made a decision, and being sober helped me with my confidence socially and just helped me say, right, you're now sober and you've got to be okay with the person you are. You've actually got to be okay with that person. Mm-hmm. And that's a massive thing. And I think a lot of people struggle with that. Like, a lot of people that drink that are masking some of those feelings. Like, it's not, you know, it's, drinking started for me to socialize and to be part of the crowd. Right. But by the end, it had changed. It was more solitary, and it was more about numbing those feelings. And it becomes sadder and more introspective. And it's late at night. It's after the kids are in bed.
Even after
I know he's stopped drinking and she's gone to bed, and I'm still up.
Yes, and I can relate to all of that.
Yeah, it's and then it's like, I don't know. You either keep going with that, or you decide to make a change.
Or you don't.
And the change can be rocky. Like, you know, you see so many people, you know, so many times I see people that go back to day one, and all of you on Living Sober starting out, you may be one of those people. You see it all the time, but often they'll get to much, it'll just reinforce why they want to stop drinking in the first place. So don't be discouraged if you go back to day one a few times. I mean, in the end, it doesn't matter. It's not about being perfect at this. It's not about keeping score. It's about, okay, is the decision right? Yes. Okay, we'll keep going. Keep trying.
Awesome, Matt. What a lovely note to end on. Oh, thank you so much. I love chatting with you always. You're a true hero. I will put a link to your website and book in the blog post underneath this video, and I'll also put a link to that Te Whare Tapawha model, if anyone's interested in that. And go well, my friend. Hope you have a good weekend. And now it's Friday night. What have you got planned? Let people know what a Friday night looks like for you. If it's just lying on the sofa watching TV, that's fine, because that's what I do.
I think it might be. It could be Olympics tonight.
Oh, yeah.
I'm not going out. Tomorrow the Coast to Coast is on, coming into Christchurch, the one day. So I'll probably go for a bike ride with a friend, and then we'll go and see the winners come through. Nice. Not allowed to finish line. But, yeah, no, we'll do something and spend time with the kids and my wife. And on congratulations on your new book, Lotta 2. Like, that's awesome.
Thanks. I've got a couple of years to write that one, so it won't be out for a while. Ooh. But it's going to be interesting. I haven't really talked much about what it's about. I won't do that here. But anyway, just want to say thank you once again, Matt. Go well. Ka kite anō.
Ka kite.
Bye.